Good evening, everyone, and hello. You're listening to Revision Media at revisionmedia.org. And today is Wednesday. That is April 29, 2020. And I'm your host, Richard Carey. And this is Arcane Semantics. We have a very special guest here tonight, folks. He's been a host here on Revision Media at revisionmedia.org. And I'm happy to say this is also the gentleman's birthday, April 29. So I'm very pleased to welcome Wilhelm Felderhoff. Wilhelm, hello.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be back. Can you hear me okay? The sound is okay?
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds good. Good volume, and we're picking you up, yeah, pretty well. Thank you.
Okay, that's great. Well, thanks for again for having me, Richard. And thank you for everything you're doing with the station and all the yellow guys. That's a good start to start with, because it's really good what you're doing. I think it's very important to have this beacon of sanity. And so great people, great guys, and super good what you're doing. So thanks for that.
Oh, I'm glad that people such as yourself approve. Basically, I mean, yes, I do see someone needs to keep carrying the torch on into the future, the next generation, as it were. For those out there who might not be that familiar with Wilhelm's background, Wilhelm is a former commercial airline pilot. He's a whistleblower on the presence of toxic elements in aviation, generally known as aerotoxic syndrome. And Wilhelm is also the founder, and he's been the initial organizer. He had been the initial organizer of the Open Mind conferences in the Netherlands. Those have definitely become legendary, certainly the initial formation of such. And Wilhelm has been a host here on Revision Media with the show Lowlands Logos, which we hope to hear from again. And we will definitely are in some very pressing times here once again. I mean, we were already talking about how much these agendas are trying to take over throughout Europe and America. Wilhelm, I mean, you're a philosopher, researcher, writer, analyst, journalist. You've been looking into all of these things for quite some time. But, I mean, this seems just it's insane, you know, like a dystopian, a future power grab. And a lot of the things we've been talking about, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, which could come into play here, people exploiting this. But it seems really bad. I want to stay positive, but I see these vaccine mandates on the horizon, possibly sooner for you in Europe, but it could be a reality, you know, any day here as well. And just this kind of draconian control, forcing people to be poor and forcing a redistribution of wealth once again from the many to the very few who already had more wealth than their morality deserved. You know, their humanity, their lack of humanity made them not deserve it already. But no, I mean, it's been great to have you here. And I just caught the interview you did with Zen Gardner 2 weeks ago. That was touching on a lot of these things. And it's getting pretty serious. I mean, you're concerned you may not have to, I mean, you may not be able to visit children if you can't even travel throughout Europe. But please, sir, thank you for being here and happy birthday.
Thanks very much, Richard. It's my time is now the 30th of April, so it's not my birthday anymore, but thanks for that. Yeah, it was a weird day. Like all these days are actually quite weird, but yeah, we are in insane times, and it seems like it's really accelerating. And with my talks with Zen, and we're just chatting and we're just exploring the boundaries of this reality. Where are we going and who we are? These kinds of questions, I think that's very relevant in these challenging conditions to get. I think these challenging conditions are also the opportunities, and that's very important to realize, of course. So I think that it's helpful to with these chats that we're just exploring this reality for what it is, and not being, you know, being pulled away with it too much, which is difficult because it comes very close now. The knock on the door is coming closer and closer, to speak. But it's insane, really. It's really insane. I don't call it the new normal. Everybody speaks about the new normal here, but it's actually the new abnormal. It was already insane, in my view. We were free-range slaves, and now we are locked-down slaves in a certain way. So it's a new abnormal. I think it's all the same. All insanity, what we saw before, is just more of the same, but more intense. I don't see it as good or bad. I think it's still an amazing time, and it still offers us enormous opportunity of answers on certain questions, big questions, huge questions, which have to do with ourselves, who we are, in an individual component and a collective component. Of course, we are all in this together, in this sort of sinking boat. But it's fascinating. It's a freak show, really, and it's escalating and it's accelerating, and it can be scary, of course. And I mean, here in France, I am now on the countryside. I live here on the countryside, in the middle of nowhere, sort of. So I cannot even start to imagine the cities, because most people in France, in the suburbs, what I already have been saying, that these are pressure cookers. Most people live with big families, groups, in just 30, 40 square meter apartments in lockdown. So, these conditions are very challenging and inflammable. So I make use of it. I might go to a haunt in a week or two, because I am a Dutch citizen, so I can go there just to be with my son and loved ones, and to organize things and meetings, to talk with a lot of people, or a lot with a group of people who are also involved with some activism before, and some people with networks, and just meet in real life, physical, and to discuss and plan and brainstorm and see what we can do about this. We cannot stop it, but we can. Well, we have to do everything we can, of course, to try to influence the course of this this monstrous matrix, mutant matrix.
Yes, I mean, it's definitely limiting as far as how much you can really change the direction this is going. And of course, mass opinion of the average person seems to be unquestioningly following orders from the corporate media and all of the numbers that they're putting out there, all of the medical advice, you know, that the powerful media corporations are pushing, and staying away from those they recommend against. I mean, it's really interesting just how many people don't question, those in government and those in the media, and don't believe they could have any hidden purpose and any hidden agenda or anything in mind that could possibly be to the detriment of the citizens.
It is remarkable, actually, if you see how I was really surprised, well, most of us, of course, how quick this was done, and how many people just obeyed these insane dictates from a government. I can hardly say that word anymore without getting all kinds of allergic reactions in my being. I already had a sort of physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual allergy for any form of fake authority, but the word government is now even more toxic word. I mean, the word government means literally mind control, as we know. It's all in our face. But this government, if you see in Holland, which you would expect that this is a sort of bit open-minded, sort of rebellious society. But and this government, which has been lying and abusing over and over and over and over again, which is made up by completely reality-disconnected reality-disconnected psychopaths and just half humanoids, AI and trained insane people, literally, who dictate these rules and laws, and people believe in it. It's just a belief system. People believe in authority, and the belief in authority is the belief in slavery, that some people have these rights to dictate and make laws, and other people have more obligations to obey these laws. But when it happened, when the lockdown came, like 6 or 7 million people in Holland watched this speech by this Prime Minister Rutte, who is a psychopath, and I know that from personal experience, actually, that he is. Most people say, well, he's such a nice guy, and he's so friendly. Well, that's one of the first major traits of a psychopath, that you don't see it, because he looks normal. But besides that, he gave his speech, same as Macron here in France, which was just a United Nations dictated auto cue, and people were in sort of ecstasy how brilliant he did it as a real leader, and just following all these fascist dictates of the government with disastrous consequences. It's a suicide. It's a ritual suicide. We are just killing ourselves by following these dictates. So I was really just amazed by that, and still am. If I speak with family who are locked in, they just, it's impossible to say any other, to give any other perception of this reality, because they immediately go into the attack more than ever. The division between the believers and the non-believers is huge and vicious. People are attacking each other if you don't follow up on these dictates. But I think this now, at this stage where we are now, it's I think the ball is in our field, if you want to call it like that. I think these coming months will be very crucial. That's one of the reasons also why I go to Holland, because a lot of people see that these dictates don't make any sense. Also the way how they're being implemented, that these big stores are open and then small stores next to it of middle class run coffee bars are closed. So it's completely contradictory and totally not science based or anything, but it's like you said, people don't have any, looks like any ability of any critical thought process anymore. They just don't think. It's so insane. It's so over the top, in your face, but people just follow and just obey. So it's a deplorable state, this human condition, on a collective level, of course. And the sad thing is that we create this reality as a collective based on the choices we make with our free will, on which actions we choose. But these actions are mostly fear-based, of course, and therefore we see more control in the external. So this massive apparatus with order followers and police, military, all kinds of inspectors in any forms, all these people who work for this apparatus operate from fear and on a conscious level, a consciousness which operates from the polarity of fear has an external manifestation of control, and that's what we see manifesting, of course, in a giant way, this giant new world order system. And the controllers themselves as well, because they want more control, and more control, and so that's also fear-based. So it's good to also watch it from a distance a bit. And but I think the coming months will be very important in the sense that we might be able, as a collective, to maybe, yes, change the coming manifestation of the current dynamics by organizing, regrouping, and maybe not following up on these orders of this of these fake authorities, these governments. But it will become messy. It will become chaos. But it's also interesting because we, as activists, or we have been fighting to get this immoral system of slavery to break it down, and that's exactly what is happening now. So that's the good thing. This needs to go to the root level, and that's what's happening. So stopping it is not an option. I think it needs to go, but the opportunities, yes, I think, or lie in another, more in the spiritual realm.
Yes, no, I definitely can see how that seems more necessary than ever for many now, especially those who've never tried to think of things in a spiritual sense or with any sort of philosophical justification for their existence. This is definitely a time, though, where it would be rough to play catch up. I mean, I've sympathized for people out there who haven't researched a lot of these topics in the past, when they wonder why some of these things are put in place or being stressed so much, such as the vaccine agenda, or the anti-Second Amendment crusade we see in politics here in the U.S. But I mean, censorship in general, it's getting so blatant. Platforms like YouTube and Facebook, it's now pretty open that they're against dissent, open dissent in any form, against basically what the government and the media are telling people. And it's crazy how much you give an inch and they'll try to take a mile, so to speak, as far as censorship, their justification for what they need to censor. And it's. I hope the younger generation will not give away, too much too easily. I mean, they start with extreme examples. Things they call hate speech. Something about pedophilia. Sure, we can all agree on that. But I mean, most things are just getting more and more distorted. Even the whole evil white racist thing, they're trying to lump everything in that category now. The three percenters who basically believe very strongly in the right to bear arms in the U.S., their Second Amendment rights, are now they're getting lumped in as racists. There was a story about a football player. He's suggesting removing his tattoo because the three percenter tattoo, he had no idea some people associate with white supremacy. It doesn't, is the thing. But if they can get people who are pro gun rights to be associated with people who are pro white, or at least against the anti-white agenda, then they can censor one more category and one more category. But it seems like they're not even trying too hard to hide how openly they're censoring things. Like I say, any sort of open dissent against the official narratives that were constantly being spoon-fed with technology.
Yeah, you're right. And this generation, I mean, my son, he's 24, and this generation has been attacked to such a degree, and on all levels, on a physical, emotional, and mental level, he's quite aware, but he never had really... he needed to fight for something, to fight for something which values or things like that, this millennial generation with this selfie culture, who has been feminized and with games, video gaming, and this education system, which is disastrous really for the mind, and this social engineering, genetic engineering also, because they have really bred out any rebellion against the state. They don't have really a notion of to rebel towards authority. That's, if you see that this new generation, I mean, my son is quite aware of what's happening. He sees it, but he's not armed with a toolbox to fight, to be independent, and to take care of yourself in a certain way. It's very difficult for this generation. There are amazing guys and smart, and but they don't have this will and this drive, because they have sort of this brain fog also, and they don't see, they cannot see further, they don't have this critical thought process really. Although there are also amazing young people as well, or that I don't want to generalize here, but this generation has been attacked to such a horrific way, and that, because of that, they are sort of apathetic to what's happening in a certain way. You know, they're chilling and they want to just chill out, and now it's with the radiation and everything, it's even more difficult to concentrate and to focus and to, if you're in the cities. So this generation is which has to do, or yeah, I mean, it's horrific. It's really horrific. It's but you know, it's in aviation. You have a lot of metaphors for life itself. It's really beautiful. For instance, you have this in aviation. You have this concept of the point of no return. And if you cross an ocean, you have to calculate your point of no return. And if you pass this point of no return, you cannot go back because you don't have the fuel anymore in your tanks. So you have to ditch in the ocean. So you have to continue towards the destination or any airport close to destination. And it can happen that after passing this point of no return, unpleasant and unexpected problems arise, like bad weather or huge thunderstorms, squall lines. And nobody likes it, but the only option is to go through it. And it's sort of the same situation where humanity is nowadays, that a lot of people still want to stop certain things or avoid it because of fear, of course. But the only option is to go through it. And I think that's a bit where we are now, sort of comparable, that we have to go through this. So, I mean, it's heartbreaking, this generation. I find it very difficult to see sometimes. But it is. These are also part of this, from a spiritual viewpoint, amazing opportunities to let go, of letting go on a deep level. It's like a sort of dying process. When I worked in these hospices, I saw these dying processes, and it's very similar in a way what's happening now, because it comes closer and we just have to let go all kinds of things which are convenient, and maybe you don't see people anymore, you know. That's also one of the reasons I go to Holland. Maybe it's the last time. Can happen that you don't see people or family anymore. It's just freaky. But at the same time, these are these opportunities for us to transcend this ego and this five-sensical full self construct, and to come to realization who we really are. I think that's the biggest question, of course. Who are we? Who we are? And these opportunities are the perfect conditions to get answers on these questions when we are willing to go through the fear instead of avoiding it, because that's often the most, you know, when it comes too close, people make this often moral concession by choosing for a wrong action because it's of fear of losing any, you know, anything which is connected to this ego or full self, whether it's your job or your people justify it because, otherwise I lose my job or I lose my status or security or my child or anything.
The material comforts in this world And just, of course, clinging to the materialism, perhaps, and just the status in the system, rather than seeing a higher purpose that they can stand behind, you know, even if things get more uncomfortable, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we have the conditions in this convenience, this concept of convenience, and that's the main goal, and as exactly completely obsessed with the physical, with the me. We have been living, most of us, as if death is just not there. I mean, watching all kinds of movies, horrible movies for death and death and death, but living our lives as if we would live forever in this way with our own individual self and me story, and what's outside of that, we have put it aside and not willing to look into it even. I mean, all these wars for the past 20 years in our name, of the voting people who vote or whatever, but all these wars abroad, which cost millions and millions of lives and suffering, destroyed all these countries in the Middle East and everywhere in the world. But people choose them, yeah, that's over there, or they justify it, yeah, we cannot save everybody. And it's the same with what we see now. If you talk with people, you say, but this suffering of people worldwide now as a result of this lockdown, and then they just... It's just not in their field of reality, their field of awareness. It's just this me, this selfie culture in a certain way, this narcissistic traits, which also a lot of these millennials have this narcissistic tendency about the me. Also, this it's all the result of this programming, this conditioning.
Some also blame. Some also blame the technology for that, you know, just how much they can be self-serving, a service to self. I mean, all this technology plugged into their phone constantly, and just the social media all geared around just self, materialistic indulgence, really, but not really any of the important topics. I don't know. No. It does seem like there's a strong potential for the technology to be a means to an end, self-defeating, though, where just compulsion to see those, you know, those new messages to check or those likes or this or that is, it's like playing a video game with Pavlovian responses where that's their pleasure center reward system, is just, you know, indulging in that technology and losing the self in the self-indulgence, ironically enough.
Yeah, in the false self-indulgence. I mean, I think the real pandemic is the pandemic of codependence, this disease of lost selfhood, and have identified with something which we're not, this false self. Of course, that's by design. The outcome by the education model is a very big part in that, where your core beliefs are being set in, and the core beliefs are at school, you're not okay. You have to do all kinds of things. You have to repeat the things that this authority, this form of authority is espousing, and you have to repeat it in a proper way, and then you're being rewarded, and then you have to do it for several years, and then you can become successful. So the core belief is then that you're not okay as who you are, and then this false self comes, you know, to the fore, sets in for self-protection, and then you identify with it. So this is this disease of lost selfhood. So we have identified with something which we're not. And I think these conditions now are offering us this opportunity, this amazing opportunity, of course, to realize who we really are, because it's all falling away. Everything which is connected to the ego, which we like or dislike, is just falling apart and falling away. And we are being confronted with our fears. Of course, we've all created a life where we avoided these fears, but now it comes close. on an individual level with questions. What? Where is the line? What am I going to do? And most people just go along, of course.
Oh, yeah. Yes, with this situation, definitely. I mean, for some people who are already a bit awake, this is definitely pushing them to explore further. But for many, many out there, yeah, I have to wonder, like you say, this is a strong stress test. And, we'll see how many people can actually, I don't know if everyone will, but enough of the populations are definitely questioning the sanity of this lockdown already. And some suggest, could this be where the elite have gone too far, have overstepped, overcalculated, or miscalculated and overstepped what they can get away with? And the pushback could be such, could it actually start a trend of people no longer trusting the system? Even those who always trust the evening news and that politician who speaks locally in the past. Could this be the straw that broke the camel's back, as they say, more than 9/11 even, to wake enough people up where they've just gone too far and overcalculated, miscalculated?
Well, that's a good question. But it's backfiring, of course, which is what I agree. A lot of people see that this doesn't make sense, and they don't agree with these lockdown dictates. And people wake up and they see, hey, this is weird. This there is more here at stake, and this is not about the virus. There is more awakening. The more they put in this alchemical, it's this alchemical sorcery, this pot. The more they put in, the more people wake up at the same time, because it's so over the top, it's so insane, and it doesn't make sense. But again, this massive group of people who are just not humans anymore, they are insane, literally. They are just AI and trained insane beings, if I see it. I still watch television sometimes just to look and to as entertainment in a certain way, but also to see what's happening there. But if you see these people, they are just completely locked in and AI and trained and not questioning, but at the same time a big group. And in the United States, I mean, you see that there are protests, massive also big protests there. And luckily, we have been so dull and docile that we have given away our rights to bear our guns and weapons. That's so we cannot even protect ourselves to this government, which is completely out of control. But hopefully the chaos will be sort of limited to a certain degree, but the masses still operate from fear, so they will then obey. But it's not a fixed thing. I think it's backfiring every step, because the next wave will come, of course. There will be a next wave because of this, especially because of the lockdown dictates that all these immune systems of people have been heavily weakened and attacked because of this lockdown and these masks and sitting inside and social distancing. So there will be next wave, and then they will come with a new reason why this next wave, and say, oh, it's back, or they will blame it on the people who ignore lockdown dictates, or they will say it's a bioterror weapon, which Bill Gates of hell says that the pandemic 2 will be a bioterror attack. Did you see that?
Right. Yes, I mean, well, it's not killing enough people. If it were engineered as a bioweapon, you'd expect it to be killing a lot more people. We're hearing that from a lot of analysts in the independent media, and that part is a good point. But the cure is worse than the disease is a phrase I'm hearing out there a lot. That applies to the economic lockdown for sure. I mean, we already have so many small businesses permanently not able to recover, a lot of employees permanently losing jobs because the small business can't hold out until this lockdown ends. We have a huge amount of alcoholism that's already on the rise. Liquor stores orders are through the roof, especially with a lot of delivery services. Liquor stores around here are getting three times the sales they normally would. Suicides are already up, and it's projected that will continue as well. We even have a lot of domestic abuse cases on the rise, unfortunately. People out of work, at home, stressed, and taking it out on children and families that have already have issues, basically. We're on the brink. So this is really not good in a lot of those ways. And then these mandates with this vaccine agenda. Once again, the cure is worse than the disease. And what you will get as a result from that, I mean, both possibly having a worse case when you do come down with one of these coronaviruses after getting the vaccine, or even a horrible result of one of these outbreaks from what is in the vaccine. I mean, on top of that, we're hearing a lot of other things, the tests collecting DNA, the vaccines with all of these microscopic bits of metal used potentially to track us. Some are talking about in conjunction with 5G. Regardless, there are a lot of draconian goals these people have, including these nanotechnology sort of advancements. So it is very concerning just how much they're trying to force this lockdown to continue. They're padding the numbers, incentivizing everyone to lie in the medical community about these numbers, and just they're already saying, oh, this may not end for 18 months or until we have this vaccine that you will have to get, or hardly anything in life in civilized society will be manageable. It's terrible, but please.
It is. But I think the vaccine, because a lot of people also are locked in, or whatever their perception of reality is, or you see with these doctors, it's horrific in this hospital. The protocols they are just using is they're killing people without knowing it, because they're following these protocols. I think the medical doctors, both my parents were doctors. The programming there is even one of the worst. It's such very long period, course before you're a doctor. So the program is so long. But still, they operate from a sort of good intention. They don't mean to do harm. So I think if these dictates will come for mandatory vaccinations, that will backfire more, of course. Then the orders will be from a different caliber, and then more people will resist, and more people hopefully will resist to follow those orders. Also, people who must receive these vaccines, I think a lot of people will resist it. But if the knock on the door comes with the threat of whatever, then people will obey, of course. But I think this whole thing, this agenda on a global scale, is impossible. It doesn't work if you want to push. You know, it's like when water goes to a funnel. It's a funnel, eh? If you push it, you want to push it through. It doesn't work. It flows over. It becomes chaotic. So it will definitely become chaos, with civil unrest or things like that. And when it's chaos, then there's no control. So that's also a window of opportunity. It's not nice, it's not pleasant, it's very unpleasant, but interference is needed for change. So it can go both ways. But I mean, it doesn't make sense also, this, you know, people, also this psychosis of people who believe in vaccinations, then they are vaccinated, But then they are afraid for people who are not vaccinated. So that actually then they say, I don't believe in vaccines. But they took the vaccine because they believe in it, but they're then afraid for people who... So there's this psychosis, really. It's just insane. And then given by this man, Bill Gates, a lot of people say, well, this is Bill Gates. It's, there's on the front page of the newspapers, Bill Gates is going to spend all his billions in the corona. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. This guy is always talking about that we're with too many people here, and now he's trying to save all these people. It's just full of total contradictions and doesn't make any sense. So I think it's also falling apart in a certain way. But what I see in the United States with these food chains are being broken by design in a certain way. I don't have a good overview of that. I listened to this Ice Age Farmers on YouTube. He gives interesting updates about the food situation, of course, if food shortages will come, and also hyperinflation and economic results of this already, then we will see more chaos. But yeah, it depends on the division between these believers and non-believers, how that will manifest.
Yes, I notice a lot of these small farmers and food producers are being targeted in particular to, well, a lot of the dairy farmers are being encouraged to sell off their cows and dairy farms permanently. A lot of the crops are needing to be disposed of. A lot of onions are going to rot, not getting picked. The milk is getting dumped. It's amazing they can't give any of this to food banks or homeless or whatever. But I mean, in some cases, yes, I mean they're getting told by the authorities to just dispose of this food. In some cases, claiming that the animals or food could be contaminated due to coronavirus, and it's ridiculous. And it seems like they do want to take small food producers out of business. And want to get rid of small businesses as much as possible in this era right here with this lockdown, setting the precedent, getting it going.
Yeah. And but, you know, here in France you have these ecologic militias. These are farmers and they operate outside. They only communicate on the markets. On local markets, not on the internet, not with phones. It's a whole network here in France, and they're very militant against corporations like Nestlé here, who took over, bought all this land, a lot of land, and, but they resisted in a very successful way, actually. I think I think that's very important. I don't know how that's in the United States, but it happens in different countries. I know that people are really coming together physically, really, because on the internet, on social media, it's still sort of preaching to the choir, of course, on social media, you know, in the comment sections and on platforms, or to make that bridge outside of it to the people, because a massive group of people see that there's something really wrong, and they are eager also, what I notice, to join something or some how do you want to call it, resistance movement or whatever, to avoid this happens again, whether they're aware that there's going to be a second wave or this is going to continue. Of course they're going to continue with this, and then it comes back in the next flu season or in the coming months, and they will use that to further the agenda, to continue their agendas. But it's not a fixed thing for sure. That's very important, I think. It's absolutely not a fixed thing how this will evolve. Why are these in the United States, all these farms, all that food, all these animals, how come that these food supplies are broken down? Because is there no, the trucks are not driving? Is that is the lockdown in such a way in the United States that these businesses are just not allowed to operate, like, you know, transport companies, or how can that be?
Well, the transportation infrastructure is still up and running. Everything from the big rigs to just people ordering food or alcohol from a local delivery service. But as far as the small farms and food producers employing people during this lockdown, with all the concerns from state to state, the governors, and in some cases the mayors perhaps for cities, but mostly on the state level, the governors are being more draconian than you'd expect in a lot of the states, especially the more progressive democratic states. But it does seem that, well, I mean, yeah, the president has left control of these sort of matters in the hands of the governors. A lot of them are definitely overreaching, and it does seem very selective in taking away any sort of independence. I mean, it's been mentioned a lot that in the state of Michigan, where Detroit is located, it used to be a big vehicle producing city of Detroit, of course, when America was a big producer of things, but they're not allowing people to buy seeds right now in Michigan, where they don't want you to be able to plant crops. And it's just as far as this food producer situation, if they're not able to hire employees in a lot of these areas, I guess. I don't know. It seems the corporations that are large enough are able to stay in business, whether it's food or other materials, even if it's these non-essential or essential items, which a lot of the governors are saying, oh, well, this is not essential. And it's amazing for seeds to be in there. You know, it just shows how they want everyone completely dependent on the government.
Yes. And I mean, people will do anything, of course, for some security. And if the government, non-essential to have labeled seats as non-essential, I mean, it's absolutely insane, really. And these big companies can just continue to operate. It's so in your face. And like here also, you have these big supermarkets, they are open. And then next to it, all these small stores, they have to stay closed. You wonder, then that doesn't make sense. Why is that? So it gets more centralized. Everything gets more centralized, and everything gets nationalized, and that only these big players, they are then left over, and then they control everything because they want to control everything. But it doesn't work. It will not work. It is not working because it's backfiring also enormously. Amazing people are speaking out and on all levels, not only about their own profession, from their own profession, a viewpoint from that, but also about bigger agendas. That's really a hopeful thing. But of course, that's maybe all calculated and also foreseen. And then they can then use it for and steer it in another direction. They always use it for, like here in Europe, you have all these 5G towers, cell towers, or set on fire. And then they use it to portray these people as lunatics, you know, and then they use it against you again. So it needs to play out as well. That's also, I think, this whole thing needs to play out, what it's doing. And then, I mean, it's not that you don't have to do anything, but I think it's very important to, like if you fly through bad weather, if you go fly through a thunderstorm, then you have to narrow down your field of attention only to the speed and your attitude. And it's sort of the same with this. You have to really calculate and adjust your speed in the sense that what you say, how you say it, and your attitude. So because it becomes almost dangerous also with people, how you communicate, what you say. It's sort of the same thing, actually. It's very similar. It's interesting that such similarities. But this thing is playing out like it's doing. It's just more of the same madness. And we have to let that happen to a certain degree, because we cannot stop it, this thing, because that's wouldn't make sense also.
And there are enough citizens who are believing the official narrative in all of this, where it seems pretty difficult to stop because of that, right?
Yeah. Well, look at 9/11. I mean, how many, all these scientists, you have thousands of these pilots for 9/11 truth, people trying to, but it's just being ignored. It's just continuous. It's 20 years later. Well, nothing. Nobody has been arrested or no investigations. There were legal things going on. Eh? That's what's going on. But what's the result? It's just continuing. They just continue. Of course, they control it. And the biggest problem is these order followers, who are enforcing these dictates, who are actually keeping this system of slavery in place. Those are the order followers. And if you see how many people are working for this system, in Holland you have these so-called order maintainers. This is a whole army. They have now a new authority given. They are now allowed to wear a weapon. These are just very low-schooled, low-intelligent people having this job. They're getting paid, hardly any training, and they are now even allowed to go in the houses of people, these people, if needed, by these new laws, these emergency laws, because the government in Holland has created these emergency laws because of this situation. So, it's just more control and further escalating. And that we cannot stop that, I think. Maybe we can maybe there will be pockets because of people waking up and resisting and refusing. But especially in the big cities, you don't want to be in a big city. And that was already the case, but now even more. These people, they don't have any food stock or preparations. It's going to be messy for sure. But again, it's also this whole thing gives us these amazing opportunities to go through this fear, and to get through this and transcend this fake illusionary reality in a certain way. I mean, it's real to the ego and to this to our false self construct, but we are something else. We are something bigger. And we serve. It's like what we're serving is something way bigger and vast and powerful than this. We don't even know exactly what it is, but there's something else. We know that this is not. That this is it, that this is everything, you know. And then it comes to an individual, on an individual level, to a certain degree, where is the line? Where are you willing to go? And that is the opportunity, I think. If everything was fine and cozy and everything was okay, then, then there were no opportunities and challenges. It's like also with flying, I don't remember all these flights over the ocean, which was blue sky and no calamities, no problems. But I remember the flights when we had were challenged and we had technical problems and close calls and these things. These are the moments are challenged for your airmanship and your as a human being. And those are the moments you look back on. That was really. When you were alive. Same with people in war situations. War, you don't want war, but for many people, see war as a very time that they were alive, that was amazing time in a certain way with challenges, but also opportunities, and people sort of transcended themselves and self-realization in these challenging times, not in these pleasant times, which are nice. But if you go to you know, to Six Flags, you want to go in that roller coaster, not in this boring, pleasant. What is it? I don't know the words in English. But if you're in it, then it's different. But we are, you know, trying to stop things, which doesn't make sense, because we want this to change. But of course, we want to sort of have a sort of pleasant change. We don't want to have this change, which is too much interference for our own individual comfort zone. Well, but that's not going to happen.
That makes me think of a lot of people in the independent media. You know, maybe they have a website with subscribers. They have a few books, perhaps that they're selling, and they're getting regular donations. They're on that edge where, you know, they're not kicked off too many platforms for revenue from doing this, but they're trying to speak out against the system, and you know, that they're right at that in between level where they don't want to rock the boat anymore, you know, definitely. And
no, I totally agree. I totally agree there. It's if it comes too close and you have this security thing, and then you have social media or websites, and you have a lot of followers, and then people, they say, well, I cannot really post this or that because, then I lose a lot of followers. And then they have an alternative sort of activist website or thing, but they don't want to go all the way because that will interfere with their security. Well, these conditions are going to interfere in a very intense way. But that's necessary. It's the only way. It's the only way. I saw a movie, V for Vendetta. Have you seen that movie?
I've heard about it from others. I haven't seen it myself, but yes, please. How would you describe the significance?
Well, it's a very interesting movie. It's in 2005. It's made. It's, the main character is based on this, on Guy Fawkes. I mean, everything. I was blown away by the movie because everything is in it: the vaccines, the virus, the mainstream media, fear porn, the obedience by the masses. It's sort of 1984 police state with curfew and these police cars driving for your protection, and it's everything what's happening now is in that movie, but. The character is then put in these detention camps and with vaccines, forced vaccinations. I was like, what? I was blown away in 2005. You wonder this predictive programming, what that is all about. But same with this 2012 Olympic thing with the ceremony. But then this other character is put in a detention camp, and then she has to give information where this Guy Fawkes guy is, and because she was with him, but she doesn't want to give this information, and she is being tortured. And then, in a certain stage, she just they say, "If you now don't give this information, we're going to execute you. We have you executed." And then she reaches a point after being tortured and all the going through this turmoil and suffering, but at a certain stage, she is free of that because she had to let it go. She's willing to die. She says, "I don't mind. Okay, I'm being executed. I don't give this information. I will not give this information." She has something which she just don't want to give. It's not only about the information, but something in her which she just guards to the point that she's just willing to die without any fear and acceptance. And that's the moment when she's just released, and she goes to this guy and this guy Fawkes and says, "Well, was it all fake then? Why? And she becomes angry. So the guy says, "Well, you had to go through this suffering and torture to come to the point that you were just free. She was free because she was just free of fear of death and willing to die, actually. And then she was free of it. So it was about this fear thing. And that's, of course, the biggest thing, to understand that life and death is actually the same, are both of the same thing. And she was free in the movie. I found it very significant and empowering at the same time, because that's what's happening now here. We are being confronted with our fears, and we have to explore these fears and go through these fears instead of, and then come to this realization and free ourselves from it. And then I find it very powerful in the movie, because that's what's happening now. We are being offered this opportunity to go through these fears on an individual level, or continue to avoid it, go along, and then whatever, then you die. I don't know how that works. What's the difference in the end, you would wonder? If you just go along and then you die, or you fight, but there's something else. I don't know how that is, the difference in the afterlife, or how that will, maybe then you're finished at the school. It's an article you sent me. You sent me that today, the article, right? About the guy who says this is a school or a classroom, and it's mm-hmm. ending, and the students who want to liberate themselves or something, who stand for truth, they want to know truth, they want to go through this fear, face these fears, despite the fear, do the right thing, and serve something which is outside, which is in the unknown, but we... You know, it's not a fixed, it's outside this whole physical, five-sensical construct, all the interests of it, but something else, something bigger, something way bigger. And despite the fear, face that and accept that and go through that. And that's then, was in that article, the same kind of thing. But it was in this movie also, but very powerful. I find it very inspiring, because all that other stuff is very heavy. You only see these detention camps and all that crap. But something, we are serving something. That's what connects us also. There's this deep connection with, you know, what we have, and which are with the other guys from the station and other people who stand for truth, for something. But actually, for something which we even don't know, but it's such a powerful connection also from the heart, on a heart level, other than the mind. And are we willing to die for that, actually? And that's, of course, I think the big question, what is death? And that can only come by experiencing it. Not, maybe not real, but and anyway, if you're willing to go through that fear, I think that's... That is offering this self-realization opportunity. But that was in that movie, V for Vendetta. It's worth watching.
Okay. Yes, I'll still definitely have to try to make a point to watch that one. I was thinking of how there is always a lot of tendency from those who control media and government to keep us distracted, of course, with a lot of different things to argue about, and divide and conquer is always a strong element with these people, these overlords, if you will. But, well, something like this vaccine issue in some ways could backfire. I mean, it definitely, at the very least, I mean, one thing they try to play upon people in this nation is divide and conquer politically, like the left and the right, the Republican, Democrat, conservative, progressive, if you will. But this is definitely something that a lot of people on both the right and the left, this vaccine issue, a lot of people are already awake to the dangers of vaccines. And this is already, even in the past couple of years, grown significantly. So this might be a bad move for these people. On a higher note, though, I mean, it is also interesting what you were discussing with Zen earlier this month in that interview, where you were discussing how much it really even should be a goal to wake up everyone around you, your friends and family, on every topic. And, you know, you want to balance things, I suppose, because you can only do so much. And you just had a lot of good points to make there. So a lot of times, even us in the truth community, we really have to weigh, pick our battles, as it were. But is there something you'd like to say on this topic?
Yes, I very much agree with that, to pick our battles. I think waking up people does, I mean, I think it's good to wake up people on the fact that we are all in this together. We are on the same sinking boat. It's not me against somebody who doesn't want it. Now, look around you. We are in the same shit. So the different perceptions of reality and different belief systems are, I think, the root cause indeed that of this division in society. I think more people are also coming together despite their beliefs, and because this individual component is also forcing people to look in themselves. So we're sitting now as slaves in our house, locked in a prison, sort of. So I think also people are questioning their own beliefs and their own rigid belief systems and the vision and towards others, and seeing now, hey, we have the same, we share the same, we're in the same situation, whatever we think. So that creates also more community or more solidarity with each other, I think. So that's the good thing. But of course, there will be divisions, especially when there's food shortages and then when there's chaos on the streets. When the civil unrest will really hit, I mean, and it will come. It will become civil unrest, which is foreseen. Then they have to implement this, the army, and to enforce and to. But maybe that's also why they transfer more to AI, because maybe there are not also a lot of not enough of order followers who will do these nasty jobs. But so I think there is also more unity. There's more unity coming. People just more also speaking from the heart, what I see, expressing love for each other and thankfulness, more humbleness, despite their rigid belief systems. But yeah, these are two different dynamics, of course. On the one hand, there is this rigid division. But I think it's very important to pick your battles now, because it can be dangerous. People are calling the police if they see somebody's not wearing a mask, or they're attacking other people who are not wearing gloves in the supermarket, or so I think it's a very important not to try to, but then you have a lot of people who are sort of recently woke up to things, and they have this sort of enthusiastic or aggressive way to try to convince people, and that's backfiring, because then that works counter effective, and then people will be more triggered because of this cognitive dissonance and fear, and so the division will sharpen also in a certain way, but maybe not. It's not a fixed clear thing. We don't know how this will evolve. Yeah, how this will evolve. I think it's impossible to get this global mandatory vaccine dictate. Might look like, if you see it on the media, if you speak around, if I speak around here with people, they won't take this vaccine. Most people in the countryside, they're preparing. They have their own growing own food. They have their preparations. And they want a more disconnect. So there is an but in the cities it's different. The cities, of course, it's more difficult to do that also, to be autonomic and disconnect.
And so, I mean, it is, I mean, well, with this station, for example, I have gone through that already early on, asking myself, you know, what is my continued goal as a journalist doing radio at all. I suppose it's to continue putting the information out there, helping people to connect with one another. I think that's a very important thing, but letting people come to the information and network, you know, come to the station and interacting with each other, not really forcing it down anyone's preconceived notions. I mean, especially when you bring up friends and family, you definitely want to appreciate what you have with people, and some things you just can't really wake them up on. Many say, why is it even our goal? Should it be our goal to wake up others? It's mm-hmm. When you mentioned that inner journey, that's really what it's about. Once we feel we've awakened to things, where else do we go now? Continue developing during this lifetime on that path. And others, they'll take their own journey in their own time, and what they accomplish in this life, that will be more up to them. Will it not?
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's also a bit late. It's too late. I think we have, what I said, this point of no return. We have passed the point of no return. The past, since the internet, there was this opportunity to look into information, which is contradicts the official narratives. But the willingness to look into that, the lack of care, there's also a lack of care to look into things, you know, that because the principle of care is really determining the amount of energy you put in your action to look into things and to care about it, to care about truth. But most people don't care about it. They just don't care about things. And they're just in a hypnotized state. And it's up to them. And we have to let that go, I think. I have to let go family and loved ones, because that's it's not possible to, and then it's up to every individual themselves now also, to a certain degree. Of course, you can, it's a very difficult issue, and to what degree you try to awake people. I'm also, you don't want to be this, how do you call it, to spoil also always the atmosphere. I always have to be careful what I say. It's always on terms of family members, how the discussion goes or what is being said. I have to always be careful what I say. So you probably will recognize that that sounds familiar to most of us who have look into alternative news. They don't have a clue. I think I spoke with my sister today and said, "Well, I do a talk on the Christian media, and she's, or my YouTube channel. This is the third YouTube channel. The other two were taken down. If I say that, they just think, oh, this is just weird conspiracy stuff or something like that. They don't look into it. They don't. Mm-hmm. They just miss it." Dismissions without looking into anything, and they don't know how to look into things. And I think it's more difficult than ever to concentrate, also for people who haven't been used to looking into information or read articles or read studies or scientific things. Like with the virus, I mean, I didn't look really into viruses and things like that, or immunology really well. With the aerotoxic, I had to look into that, which is sort of boring, because, or not boring, but you're not trained to look into information other than what information is given by authority. And now with Netflix and all this, people are in an alpha state for most of the day. So you really talk right. It's a frequency thing. So if you communicate, it's just vibration frequency. So if you interact with people, most of the communication is, of course, non-verbal, and it's an energetic interaction. So it causes interference, because most people are just most of the day in an alpha state, whether they look on their phones or Netflix. So it's almost impossible to expect people to look into things, you know. They just dismiss it almost automatically. Mostly past station to try to awake people. Of course, it's good to just, but it's also a challenge to just mention certain things. If you bring up the figures, the official figures now, it's so in your face. You don't have to go to alternative websites, but if you just use the statistics of the official CDC or NHS or on the RIVM, mm-hmm. which are mostly all partly funded by Bill Gates, it says it's self-evident, but they cannot then start a sort of thought process and apply logic and then come to conclusions and then come to certain actions based on that. It's just impossible. The cognitive dissonance, first it was sort of brain fog, then it's sort of gel, and now it's cement almost. You're talking to a wall.
Yes. You mentioned how a lot of people just don't care to look into a lot of these topics. Either, like you say, they're so self-absorbed, they don't see the significance, are interested one way or the other how things are, or they don't see the connections, they haven't had time to do any of this research you mentioned, which takes a long time to see how a lot of these things interrelate and have nefarious agendas connected to a lot of these people who are in control of the wealth and power. At the same time, I mean, there's, well, like you say, just so much that you can actually want to try to wake others up. But as far as understanding what you can do, I suppose it really is about being able to be your own analyst and at least encourage that, you know, sow a little seed in those around you in day-to-day life to get them to, you know, try to look into things on their own rather than believing what they're told on everything, be their own final judgment, you know, not even expect to find some guru in the independent media who will have all the answers for them. Just realize that they have to look to a lot of sources and look at the data and make their final opinion. I mean, with the numbers, like you say, and all the padding of the numbers, even with us believing the official story, if you compare it to the flu of recent years, like over here, the 2017 to 2018 flu, we've been discussing compared to now, that we had 80,000 deaths, which we hadn't even reached still, to justify this economic lockdown, all the effects this is going to have in the future. There's just no justification. If you just look at some simple thing like that, all the other things that people die of commonly, like Crohn's disease, kidney disease, heart disease, heart attacks, a lot of these things are getting put into the COVID-19 column by doctors. We have two different codes. They're using one where it's definitely a confirmed tested case of COVID-19 and one where they just can't completely rule it out. They don't have to do the test. But, I mean, regardless here, where the medical system is already a for-profit industry ever since the 70s, we have a lot of incentivizing where just a patient, whether they die or live, anyone who walks through the door, if they consider it a COVID-19 case, they get $13,000 more for the hospital right now. And if they do happen to put someone on a ventilator, they get $39,000. So, I mean, there's a ridiculous financial incentive by the medical community as well as pressure, letters they're getting, reminding them that, you know, you really don't have to have any confirmed test for someone as COVID-19 positive to market as COVID-19 positive. And it's for the best if we can't be sure, that we want to definitely catch all these cases. So you probably want to market that way. Basically, one doctor, I have a recording of him reading the letter he received verbatim. But, I mean, not just that sort of coaxing from these medical organizations, but the financial incentive here is just ridiculous. I mean, $13,000 just to say that they're a patient who was COVID-19 positive. I'm wondering what's going on in Europe. I mean, especially somewhere such as Italy. I believe they're padding the numbers there as well. I wonder if there could be any financial incentives even going on there during this situation, or if it's just threats, basically. Lose your license or, you know, be taken in by the authorities for spreading fake news even these days, right?
Yeah, but it's most is just a result of programming. These doctors, they are being programmed with a protocol. They receive a protocol how to test. I mean, the whole testing issue, how do they test? I mean, they don't even test for a virus. They do. I spoke with somebody who works on the intensive care in Holland, and I said, how do you test then? And he said, with a CT scan. So they're testing with a CT scan and said, but how can you then determine if there's a virus? And there's a whole other discussion about the virus, what it exactly is, and if it's excretion from the cell and these exosomes. That's a whole other theory. But they test only with a CT scan and symptoms. Well, then what does it say? You cannot then say there's the presence of this typical virus. If you do that, you have to have this on the electron microscope, then you have to isolate the virus, and then you have to purify it, and then you have to put it in a control group, and then you have to do testing, and then you can. The testing is just doesn't. I mean, it's just an. But if you're programmed to do it like that, and then say, okay, this is it, then you think that this is COVID. But how is it with the flu? Because the amount of deaths, the numbers of people who died from the flu this year, or is there any, I don't know anything about that actually. How many are the numbers of people who died from the flu this year? Or, because apparently that a lot of people say this is not the regular flu. So how many people died this year of the regular flu then? Do you know anything about that? Because it's an
interesting issue. I haven't heard anyone in the independent media who've been able to get any numbers whatsoever on the deaths from the regular flu. So my only conclusion is that all deaths from regular flu are being labeled COVID-19 deaths, just as I'm saying for a lot of these other conditions people are dying of, that they die of every year, every season, are being labeled as mislabeled rather as COVID-19. It's just a fascinating how even with all of this, they're not able to pad the number enough to get anywhere near something surpassing common numbers per year of a lot of these conditions, where the justification for this lockdown, it's so obvious to us that there's another reason. To most people, they just don't think about it enough or could see what the reasons could be. So they figure that why would they be lying? They think it sounds ridiculous and laugh.
Yes, and I agree, because I spoke with some family members and I brought this up, and they agree. Most people agree that these lockdown dictates are just not in line with what's actually happening, and the results of this lockdown is disaster for lives, and the secondary effects are just way more worse than this whole virus thing itself. So most people see that, but then they still believe in government and authority. So then they say, yeah, but it's also very difficult for the government how to deal with this. You know, then they go on that they go on that train. They say, because yeah, it's very difficult how to deal with it. They have to make choices. So then they go to see from that angle. They see that it's ridiculous, it's too much, but then they still have belief in government. Most people believe in government, in the legitimacy of government, and they, because we need the government, and you know, things like they believe in authority. So that's underneath it, this belief, you know, in government, then yeah,
absolutely.
Then make any, whatever they're doing, they're destroying and killing our millions. So if they will still believe in government or in any external form of authority to protect us and to help us. But if you say government killed 250 million people in the last century, excluding wars, and they still believe in it. Pharmakia means, if the word pharmakia means literally witchcraft, sorcery. And, but there's still, and the flu vaccine doesn't do any good if you see it. People die 80,000 in the United States or something like that in 2017-18. And despite the vaccine, so why do you want this vaccine, this Russian vaccine? But still, they just have this codependence towards something in the external. This dependence it's very dysfunctional. It's the same if you are abused and you go back every time and you say, "No, he's changed." You know, this abusive man in the family who keeps and becomes worse and worse. It becomes worse, and then they go back. And you wonder why he go back. Yeah, no, but he's changed, and give another chance, or we vote and we get another guy. You know, it's just the same codependence. It's just, it's lethal, the codependence, and it's often fatal. This belief in something, you know, this dependence on a dysfunctional entity like government.
Yes, and right now, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the media, for the most part, the corporate media in this country, most of it is sided with the left, the Democratic side, the left, and a lot of it is far left sort of a policy and thinking, really. I mean, it's interesting how much, though, the message there is to conform to government, report on your neighbor if they're not conforming to government. You know, these are the same people who bring us Antifa, basically, from funded by the George Soros organization there. But, I mean, you know, they seem so rebellious, but really, no, they're trying to force everyone to comply with the government. If the government says that's, you know, that sticking up for whites or you know, being against the tearing down of these statues or monuments, speaking out against this anti-white agenda, you know, that's hate speech, so, you know, we have to take you down. Speaking out against this now, I mean, all of the media is, they're trying to associate all these things, like I'm saying, you know, being pro-gun with being racist. And as they're saying, if you're on MSNBC, Microsoft NBC station, they're trying to equate people who don't want to wear masks with racism, because they're saying blacks are more susceptible to dying of this COVID-19. They're saying some of it due to the lifestyle choices. Nonetheless, they're saying that people who are going out without masks, they want to kill blacks. They want to kill black people. So it's racist if you're going out without a mask on. And it seems the same people who were all bashing Trump, you know, are all attacking anything, twisting anything that he says that they could use against him, and to be in favor of this lockdown being more draconian, to get all of these anti-Trump people, all these far-left media anti-Trump people to be all about draconian, totalitarian government control. Tattle on your neighbor, censor everything that the government doesn't approve of. It's kind of attitude, and they're trying to make it popular. Yeah. You know, the same way with the whole Antifa sort of empathy you know, the far left media seems to indicate. So, I mean, they're definitely trying to get the popular culture to want draconian control over their life.
Yeah, this liberalism is just suicide. The book Suicide of the West, I don't know who forgot the name, but he writes about liberalism is just a suicidal ideology, which is operating from self-hate, hatred. I had a discussion with a lot of family members who are liberal, left, intellectual people, but they have this self-hate, really. If you bring up race, then I was also a victim of this white guilt trip for a period when I was younger. I thought with the slavery and all that nonsense, false history. But I brought up this. I said to at a certain moment that I'm actually quite proud of the white race. I was just they exploded the whole thing. Racist, you're racist, total racist. That's just Nazi kind of talk. Just being by saying I'm proud.
They were horrified. They were horrified that you wouldn't condemn your race, condemn white people in every way.
Literally, that's the right word, horrified when I said that. Very interesting. He's crying, even to point for crying and half hysteria. How I ever could? There are people in my family who would call me in who have been arrested if things become worse. If I don't wear a mask, right. I have really a lot of problems. For any authority, I've tried to go to the supermarket the last two times in town, but I just left because I cannot go in there without just ridiculing or just making jokes or just I cannot take it seriously, and then I just leave because it just doesn't work. It's very difficult I cannot take it seriously, but that's of course you have to what you say, you have to be don't be stupid, but I cannot almost. And then you see these whole food stores, it's also you have all these liberal sort of aware people in these whole food stores all wearing masks and gloves, you know, in the organic stores, all these so-called white people there. It's just a freak show, but these liberals especially, they operate from deep self-hatred, I think. That's in the politics here, they also with immigration and refugees, and we have to help them and whatever. They hate white or just are, but if you bring it up, nothing. It's impossible to talk about these kinds of subjects. So how is your? Because I see also a lot of people clinging on this whole QAnon thing. It's also interesting. I saw a channel, somebody sent it to me, and it's like 150,000 subscribers, completely in the whole QAnon. Phenomena. What is your take on this?
Well, I've always suspected QAnon to be a controlled opposition, and I've heard more and more people agree with me. Some have even presented some information to help support a confirmation of some of the connections that they could see the information indicating. And in some cases, suggesting it was, really, in retrospect, I could see exactly what was being pointed out. It's very much pro-government in a pro-Trump angle. And I'm fully aware that there's, for quite some time, a lot of investment by the government in trying to have operatives who are pushing their stance in the independent media. It might be just subtle, only a few here and there, but it definitely exists, as for a long time, ever since COINTELPRO operation in this country. There's been a strong interest that's never gone away in trying to control the narrative, have controlled opposition, and just people in the independent media, for that matter. It's everything that QAnon was saying, though, was pro-Trump, pro-government, but pro-Pentagon war machine, pro-Israel, pro-Israeli war stance as well. And that, I think, was one thing that gave it away. Because I looked into too much of the nations of the Middle East to be fooled that easily. And that was one of the things, I think, definitely that gave it away for a lot of us. But I noticed on Facebook there had been a drop in a lot of the QAnon groups over time. More and more people who were into it for a while became disillusioned and decided that it perhaps was not genuine, you know, and, you know, had motives, ulterior motives, or, you know, controlled by forces, and that they didn't agree with. I mean, a lot of people will use a lot of these things for their own agenda, you know, trying to hijack something temporarily and then lead people to something better. That's not, it's not anything more than, I think, a reinforcement of deep state ideals, though, with the QAnon case. And I don't know, as far as what other, I'm just comparing the U.S. to Europe, where you are, and just a lot of the, you mentioned how most people are getting fed up, but not enough people are questioning enough. Even if they see the damage and that you can't justify all this, they're not really putting any more pieces to the puzzle together. We don't have enough people who are doing that. So are we going to reach saturation, a saturation point where, you know, where we can see something better come of this, unless we can get that?
Yeah. And people not really communicating now with the social distancing and everything like that. I think it's very important to come together and to really discuss things, really physically being together now, because everybody's just locked in their own places. But with this whole QAnon and Trump, this, also this codependence again, that people could hope. I saw a video about the ritual aspects of this whole corona thing, that they harvesting this hope, that the people put hope in things, that they're harvesting that was interesting. But because it's putting hope in some people in government or in an external thing, but not being just autonomic sovereign, and not anybody to save me or things like that. But if you put your hope in, and Trump, of course, I think he has his personal business interests. He sees his own business also deteriorating, that he reacts from his personal interests, because he's, of course, a narcissist, extreme narcissist. Narcissist? So he reacts on that, I think, as well. He sees his economic interests also being affected by this, and therefore he reacts sometimes just outside the agenda or whatever, not in line with the official agendas. I think that's interesting to see.
Well, yes, he does show a glimmer of hope at times with what he will say. And allegedly at the moment he's speaking out against Bill Gates and this Dr. Fauci. That could be good as far as the vaccine situation here, but we'll see. He does at times go against the establishment enough to give people some hope still. A lot of what we have discussed here is covering the topic I was promoting for tonight, faith and safety in government. And that's, you know, Mark Zuckerberg approved title there. That's pretty ambiguous, but definitely just hearing that, I think, can make a lot of people really question how much they should really abide by any of that. It looks like we have a caller possibly on the line, Willem. Perhaps they had something to ask, or I don't know. Let's see. Hello, caller.
Yeah, this is Tony. Am I coming through?
Hey, yeah, you're coming through. Great, Tony. Hi, yeah, thanks for calling. Yeah, we're here with Willem Felderhoff. Is there something you wanted to ask?
Yeah, no, I don't want to take up a lot of time, and I just want to comment real quick. I think it was an excellent show, and there's not really much more you can contribute to it. And you know, people are probably just up to their ears with this COVID thing. And the key is, you know, waking people up. That's the reason we all do this. And like you had said just now, you know, because I missed the first few minutes, but I think it might have started late. But at any rate, getting people to question the government and to look at these things. And sometimes that can be just so difficult. But another angle that I've been using, and I just like to put this out there, to make it obvious to them that they're not all working together for your better interest, is the fact that it's so partisan. I mean, the partisanship alone should let you know. I mean, I try not to engage in that, because when I talk to people about this, for example, a point that I make is say, look, you know, it wouldn't matter who was in the office at the time. Everything they did would never be good enough. And this is all about grandstanding and, you know, just like the stimulus checks, of course, Trump has to have his name on it and this type of thing. And it's they're pigs at a trough. And I'm talking about the United States specifically. I don't know exactly how it all works in Europe, but, you know, and if you can just maybe wake people up to that just because that's it right in your face, right? It doesn't matter. They hate each other. This thing with like Cuomo and blaming Trump when he had all these respirators that they weren't even using, the guy's lying through his teeth, you know, and nobody can admit that they screwed up. My understanding, I also heard a story that, because I do think this is important, that in New York, and please look this up in the audience, that they were actually, I don't know that Cuomo himself, but whoever, but they were actually forbidding them to reject these people that were infected. So they were, while quarantining the healthy, which is something we've never done in the history of mankind, as far as I know, right? And for the first time, we quarantined the healthy. They allowed all of these sick people with the COVID-19 into the elderly, among the most vulnerable. I mean, granted, they were elderly themselves, and from what I understand, there's been quite a few deaths from that. You know, and then there's just a lot of public transit in New York and New Jersey and places like that. So obviously, but anyway, I don't want to take up a lot of time. I just want to put it out there. I think he's a great guest, and I hope you have him on again. And I'd really like to see some of these guys do the roundtables, you know, and that less formal and take questions and that type of thing. I'd like to see that. I you know, also he mentioned the word pharmakeia, which comes out of the Greek New Testament. I don't know if the gentleman's a believer or not, but I love listening to those people's perspectives. One of my favorites also is Robert Raybould over there on RBN. I'd love to see you get him as a guest. And you know, and like I say, I'm not a believer, but I don't want anybody to feel like I'm ganging up on him or whatever. So the more the merrier, and just the more the voices of everyday people in real life. I think the round tables are awesome. But anyway, I'm sorry. I went further than I wanted to. But anyway, I just want to commend your guest and the show this evening. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tony. I appreciate you calling tonight.
Thanks, Tony.
Yes, thank you.
Good point. Yeah, I think it's good point.
Yes,
it's really like this whole partisan, which is what you bring up as well. But people, if you, it's sort of, they see the government almost as a sort of, it's like an abusive father figure, and they just protect it. They just don't go over the. If you speak to people who live in a dysfunctional relationship or in a family, and you say, "Well, just leave or just stop with it," and they just, no. But they completely dependent of it. They just, if you bring up common sense, just common sense logic to people, and you say these kinds of things. That this government is lying, and just bring it up. Look around you. Look, Europe is destroyed. It's just completely destroyed. My country, Holland, France, even worse. But this mass immigration, especially the past decade, is just. It's just not my country anymore. You feel a stranger in your own country. That's only the one thing. So the buyer. But if you bring that up. That's all government. It's not. We didn't vote for that, or we didn't. We didn't choose that. We're not allowed to choose. We voted against the EU laws, they just install it. So this government is lying all the time again. But it's just, if you mention that, anything, then you get this sort of look, and they stare at you. Yeah. Well, they try. They excuse it. This is codependence. It's dysfunctional disease, mental disease of lost selfhood, and putting faith in a dysfunctional, insane entity in this case, which is government, and they just don't follow up. If you bring up common sense, that with this COVID, there's so much you can bring up which doesn't make any sense at all, and they just think, yeah. Like in the United States, 100,000 people die every year of respiratory problems. Now 40,000 less this year or something, things like that. And then they just, but they don't follow up with action or look into it. They defend it. They just defend it because they lost. They just lost. Most people are just lost. And that's sad, but it's the truth, I think, because they don't know what to do when they. If you put today's people in the forest alone without a phone, they die. They freak out in nature.
Right.
It's just the deplorable state, especially these millennials. If you put them in the forest, they're scared, or insects. If they're insects, they whatever, completely disconnected from nature and reality. Thus, so it's very sad, but it's.
Can I interject something here?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you just made an interesting point. I just want to put this out there because it's something that I mention to people all the time, is that now we're so conditioned like cattle, if you will, right? The TV, the television, everything's mapped out for us by the government, including the streets themselves, right? So you look at these signs and you just grow up and you go through your life and you know the street signs, you know how to navigate through all that, but you don't know to look at the sky. And if we mock the ancients, but all ancient people, when at night, when it got dark, and they knew the sky. Now we have people that get lost, say, in cold environments, and they'll get high, drunk, whatever. They get lost in the woods, and they're not coming out unless a rescue finds them. But the ancients, when the sun went down and the night fell in the sky, they knew which way to go. We've lost that. So, like you said, I just wanted to add that.
Yeah. And that's also the result of technology. When I was starting to fly, I had the old generation aircraft without glass cockpit, without GPS, only clocks and buttons and needles, and just basic flying where you have to calculate distance, the wind, all these kinds of things in consideration. Next generation pilots, this newer generation, they fly with GPS. They don't. Their situational awareness and positional awareness without these instruments, without navigation, without GPS, they're just lost. So their situational awareness is just below standard. And it's the same with this technology now, with people with a smartphone. Their situational awareness, literally, or positional awareness in society, in life, is just completely gone. Sort of the same thing. If you... These pilots, you just cover the navigation, navigation screen. Then and where are you now? Just with some needles, the wind and things. And when you're going to descend, they just don't know. It's same with navigation in the car. If it's switched off, you're lost. So this situational awareness in life itself is because of this technology. It's just. People are completely AI entrained and have it's a religion. They're completely dependent on something else than themselves and connect with nature, what you say. In the old times when it becomes dark, now people just stay inside, look at the blue screen. So
yes.
They're lost.
Yes, and I mean, they're figuring that, if it's not on Google, Wikipedia, YouTube, then it must not be relevant. So,
unless it's an influencer,
we have this whole global system, though. I mean, it seems like the UN. I've said if anything seems to be the public face of this push toward a global conformity, you know, with information control, perhaps leading the way, in, at the moment, at least. But control in general, certainly, is always pressing from these forces. As far as the technology, we still want to use it as a tool. What's your best advice, I guess, for your closing thoughts here? I don't want to take up much more of your time. We're at the end of the hour, though. And I do appreciate Tony in Virginia and his contribution tonight. Thanks, Tony. Were there any other final words you wanted to say to Willem, for that matter?
No, I just think it'd be great if you had him on more often and maybe engage in questions and answers and everything. The man seems to be very knowledgeable. And that's awesome, being a pilot. I got to tip my hat to you, utmost respect. That's why one of the careers that I've always kind of envied, you know, flying and everything. That right there is a unique experience that most people don't get to have. But no, anyway, I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you. Love the network and appreciate it.
Thanks, Tony. Take care.
Yes, thank you, Tony. Yeah. Your final thoughts?
I think it's good to keep in mind that we are all in this together and we are all going through the same shit. And we have all these personal, individual issues. Sometimes you wake up and you think, what am I doing here? Whatever, you go ups and downs, roller coaster all the way. But we have a deep connection with truth, and that will always be. And it's good to remember that we're not alone. We're in this together, and it's an amazing time, amazing opportunities. And I think we're exactly on course with this, where we want to go, and liberate ourselves and realize who we are and free ourselves. And these conditions are offering us this opportunity to go there and just continue on course. It's the best we can do. And I think it's exactly how it should be, reality. It's exactly how it should be. That's good to remember, I think. Keep in mind. Because most people, there are a lot of people feeling very alone. We are all in the same boat together.
Yes, we do need to see the big picture and not lose the forest for the trees, as it were, in this. So certainly, all wise words. Thank you so much, Willem. Once again, happy birthday as well. Thank you for being here. And definitely, I'd look forward to us having more chats a bit more frequently as we can fit in.
Yeah, great, Richard. Thanks for being there as well. Thanks for the station. Thank you all you guys also with working on the station and the guests. And I look forward to come back again and have a chat. The roundtable, good idea to join the roundtable. I tried so often last week. Also tried to come on and call in, but then I went to bed. It was too late for me. But
sometime we'd love to hear from you sometime on a roundtable, definitely. Just like Tony expressed as well. So that will be something we'll look forward to, and certainly at any point in future when you want to do some more set of shows, again another set of shows again, we would look forward to that. You're always welcome.
Thank you very much, Richard. That's very kind. I will surely keep it in mind.
Excellent.
And try whenever I can.
Excellent. And I hope everything goes well. We'll each see what the future will have upcoming months here in the United States and in Europe. Well, thank you so much, Willem, and have a great night.
Thank you, Rich. Speak soon. Take good care. Much love to you.
Same here. Cheers, my brother. And thank you to all the listeners.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Good night, sir. And thank you to all the listeners, and we will speak again soon. Until then, transcend the construct. Regards.